With the 20th pick in the NFL draft, the Philadelphia Eagles select.
You're listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast, presented by AAA.
Every athlete has a journey. Focus on the game. Let us worry about getting you there. Auto repair, roadside assistance, and auto insurance. Start your journey at AAA.com. Hello, Eagles fans, and we could probably say Eagles draft fans at this point. Welcome to the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. I'm Chris McPherson, joined in frigid Indianapolis, the site of this year's NFL Scouting Combine, none other than Fran Duffy.
In a week of understatements, you saying it's frigid is perhaps the most egregious understatement. It is brisk, to say the least, here in Indianapolis.
It certainly is. Good thing that pretty much the transportation to getting from the hotel to the stadium can all be done indoors.
Thankfully.
But certainly it is not the best time to be in Indianapolis. But nonetheless, we are here to check out this year's prospects, and we have a great show for you today as we will hear from NFL Films senior producer Greg Cosell. He's going to kind of give us an overview of what he's seen from this draft class to this point. He's been diving into the tape. He's going to talk about some of the positions of strength here and, you know, maybe throw out some names of possible fits for the Eagles with the number 20 pick. And then we're going to have two player interviews. One is a former Chip Kelly quarterback, and you're probably thinking Marcus Mariota, but you would be wrong. Is Brian Bennett from Southeast Louisiana. He transferred a year after losing the starting job at Oregon to Mariota. And Sean Hickey, Syracuse tackle from Pennsylvania. The story with him is we got a one-on-one with him today during the media interview session, and he just gave some great insight into playing the offensive line, playing the tackle position, and gave a good scouting report on one of the top edge rushers in this year's draft class. So we will have those for you in a little bit. But we're going to kick things off with the latest headlines in the segment that we call Draft Buzz.
Now it's time for Draft Buzz.
All right, the first headline for Draft Buzz, it's the time of year where you're talking about who is and who is not participating in the combine drills. And a bit of a departure from previous years, Fran, in that the top quarterbacks, Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota, Brett Hundley, are all going to throw at this year's combine. What does that mean to you?
Well, it's great to see these guys come out and compete. And anytime any of the head coaches or general managers that were available to the media today were asked about both of those guys competing, their eyes and faces lit up. They were really, really excited to see both those guys, willing to come out on this field, you know, throw to receivers that they haven't seen before. And I'm wondering how much of that. Obviously, look, both these guys, for all intents and purposes, are very, very competitive. In turn, on the field, have that kind of character, that kind of demeanor that would warrant, you know, they're wanting to come out and play. But you go back to last year, and Teddy Bridgewater chose not to throw it at the combine, chose to throw it his pro day instead, and didn't have a chance to make up for what, you know, for all intents and purposes, was not a good performance at his pro day from, you know, everybody that was there. It did not go well. So I wonder how much of that played into their decision to throw here in Indy.
Real good point there on Bridgewater. And like you said, they will have a chance at their pro days where they will have familiar receivers. Will it be, they can script the workouts. I really think the coaches and personnel execs, they just want to see the guys throw the ball live. I think they're going to understand that, look, they're not going to have the perfect timing with the receivers. Balls might not be 100% perfect, but they want to see the throwing mechanics. They want to see the ball come out of the hand.
That's what it all comes down to. They want to see how the ball comes out, regardless of whether it's complete or not. I mean, it could go 5 yards in front of the receiver. The receiver may not have been on the same page. That's not important. They want to see how these guys throw it.
So certainly good. Now, obviously, it's not going to be the end-all be-all because you look at most of the quarterbacks in recent years, they didn't throw at the combine.
Sure.
But still, it's good to see them compete, and it really helps out the scouting combine. Now, one quarterback who is in the mix. Now, pretty much you talk to most analysts, Fran, they'll say it's Mariota, Winston, however you want to rank them. And we're actually going to dive into your actual rankings on tomorrow's episode. We'll start diving into the rankings. We'll call it a little Fran versus the Machine, where we're going to stack up
scary.
Fran's top five at certain positions against the experts. But the number three quarterback position seems to be a wide-open competition, and one player in the mix, Garrett Grayson from Colorado State, is not going to be able to throw at the combine, and it's due to a hamstring injury.
Yeah, and it's a shame. You know, we got to see him at the Senior Bowl, and we saw what he was able to do down there. I thought he was the best quarterback in attendance in Mobile. 6'2", 215 pounds. Look, he's not the most fleet of foot guy. He doesn't have great feet in the pocket, and that's going to turn a lot of people off. But when you watch him, just the ability to make anticipation throws, I think he's got a good arm. He doesn't have a great arm, but he's got a good arm. I think he makes some throws in that offense that not a lot of prospects in this draft were able to make. So, you know, it's tough to not see him out there, but I think the film speaks for itself with Garrett Grayson. I think he's, again, not a great prospect, but I think he's in this class is probably the number three guy.
All right, the next Draft Buzz headline, Sammy Coates, the wide receiver from Auburn, who's expected to tear it up here at the Combine this week from an athletic standpoint, would need to run a fast 40 for first-round consideration, and that's per ESPN's Todd McShay.
See, I think for everybody's pretty much expecting that Sammy Coates is going to run really, really well. I mean, you go back to even a year ago, Bruce Feldman every summer releases that freak list of the guys who he thinks he's the most freakiest athletes at each position in college football. He said that at Auburn, and you know, so you got to take it with a grain of salt. At Auburn, they had him as high at 4.16. Take that for what it's worth. But
was it averaged, the 30-yard dash?
Yeah, but he averaged in the 4.25. I don't think he's going to run 4.25, you know, on Saturday. But if he gets 4.32 at just under 6'2", 215 pounds, that'll be very impressive. I think that, to me, the number one thing for Sammy Coates is going to be the gauntlet. Everyone questions his hands. No one questions his athleticism, his ability to go up and attack the ball in the air. His leaping ability is outrageous. His athleticism is off the charts.
It's the hands.
It's the hands. So will he be able to play fast, not jog through the gauntlet drill? That's the big thing you want to watch. You know, when you see these guys that time really well in the 40, see how well they run in the 40 or in the gauntlet drill. Are they still going full speed and able to pluck the ball, not have double catches or drops, and you know, those types of things? I think that's going to be really important for Coates this week.
Seems like that's something that's hard to correct at the next level. Seems like when you look at receivers, the drop issue, if that's something that's prevalent in college, seems like that carries over.
That's a good point. And I think, you know, the hands is a tough thing. And Phil Savage last year, when we did the Scouts Notebook pieces, he brought up the fact that, you know, a lot of people, and I think he's a person that feels this way, if you, for every drop, counter that with a great play down the field or counter that with a great catch and run, as long as you're making big plays to counteract those drops, some people are willing to look past it. But, you know, if you ask a couple of these GMs today, I know Steve Keim was one of them from the Arizona Cardinals, a couple of the other general managers and head coaches that spoke, when they were asked about wide receivers, the first thing they said is hands. And obviously that is the most important trait for a receiver. So for Sammy Coates, those are the things that he's going to have to overcome, because I'll tell you what, he's got a lot of other big traits that you're going to like.
The Cardinals got Larry Fitzgerald taken care of today.
Sure.
So they're not worried about the receiver position right now. Next up here, Dorial Green-Beckham, the uber-talented receiver who started his career at Missouri, was kicked out of the program, transferred to Oklahoma, and worked on the scout team, didn't actually play in 2014, decided to declare early for the draft, has been deemed by one scout per Albert Breer from NFL Network the best wide receiver prospect since Calvin Johnson.
Well, I mean, you know, in terms of on field, that might be right. I mean, but you're looking at a guy who's 6'5", 225 pounds, 200. I mean, we'll see. He might come in at 230 this week. A guy who's used on bubble screens at that size, because you know, you see the ability after the catch, and most importantly, the ability to go up and win in contested situations. The great hands at the catch point. Those are the things that kind of separate Dorial Green-Beckham from a lot of the other guys in this class. And obviously, look, teams are going to have to do their homework off-field, and that will ultimately determine where he's going to get drafted.
It's going to be very interesting that you don't even have 2014 tape to go off of, that
right.
He's still very young, but the talent is going to draw someone in as long as the background checks out.
That's going to be the big thing. I mean, the guy had 17 touchdowns in two seasons as a part-time player, you know, for Mizzou, so that's going to be a very, very interesting case study moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, character is going to be the big storyline on Thursday at the NFL Scouting Combine. The quarterbacks are going to be meeting the media, and everyone's going to be looking at Jameis Winston. Now, earlier today, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who hold the number one overall pick, Lovie Smith, said that in their eyes, the off-the-field stuff with Winston wouldn't keep them from drafting him. They think that he could be the face of the franchise. And Jason Light, the general manager, said that, you know, they want to use the number one pick. They're most likely going to use the number one pick, and they have a pretty good idea of who they're going to use it on. So it seems strongly they're hinting towards one of the quarterbacks. But
I think they did a good job at not tipping their hand too much. Both of those guys, you know, got peppered with questions about both quarterbacks.
Of course.
Were asked about just the quarterback position in general, you know, trying to get a sense of are they scared of spread offense quarterbacks against pro-style quarterbacks. I think both of those guys were able to show the poker face pretty well.
The thing is, when you have the number one pick, unless you're saying that you're going to be open to trading the pick if somebody comes at you with a ridiculous offer, but they need a franchise guy. And they already jettisoned their one quarterback who was signed to be the starter in free agency last year in Josh McCown. So obviously it says that you would think the door's open for them to bring in another quarterback.
Absolutely.
With another top pick. Of course, they did say Mike Glennon, he's the future. You know, they think that he could be a top-level guy.
He looked pretty good as a rookie, by the way, a couple years ago.
He did.
We digress.
Our last draft buzz item, cornerback Jalen Collins of LSU. If he runs fast, expect him to be a first-round selection. And there's one thing that worries you a little bit here, Fran, and that's for the size, the athleticism that he has, the fact that he did not get on the field that often during his time in Baton Rouge, you know, gives you a little bit of pause.
A little bit. I mean, he started 10 games as a redshirt junior. But, I mean, he still had pretty good production because he rotated in quite often. I mean, he had 20 ball disruptions over his career, over 10 starts. I mean, that's pretty strong. And obviously the size, the speed, he's got the tools that you want. But I think you just want to check that and see what is the deal there. I mean, look, LSU every single year brings in these corners as high school recruits that are just outrageous. I mean, I think he was benched this year for a guy who was 6'3", 220 pounds. Like, they just grow on trees down there at LSU. So, obviously, the talent pool down there, you know, there's going to be a lot of competition. But you still want to see those guys, you know, the cream rises to the crop. You want to see those guys, you know, take a hold of
the
starting spot.
The crop.
Cream rises to the crop.
So, we're going to transition from there into our next segment, Mr. Relevant. And then we bring on NFL Films senior producer Greg Cosell, who's going to break down the top-heavy positions in his eyes in this year's draft class, talk about some of the prospects. And as someone who knows the Eagles quite well, you know, who are some possible options for them at that number 20 position?
It's time for Mr. Relevant.
We're pleased to be joined here by NFL Films senior producer Greg Cosell. He also does plenty of things for Philadelphia.com throughout the course of the season and the offseason as well. Great job with the Film Room series, which has finally kicked off.
I appreciate it.
You know, I have to give you a little bit of praise.
Well, don't overdo it.
I'm not going to overdo it.
Then you'll make me think I know what I'm talking
about,
and most we know I don't.
You've been delving into the film, getting ready for the 2015 NFL Draft, and quick overall view of which positions you feel are very strong, which positions you feel there's not a lot of talent to be had this year, which position you think would be the most.
Well, I'm still early in the process, but two positions I think where you're going to see good players are wide receiver and I guess what you'd call pass rusher, because pass rusher can encompass a DN, a linebacker, but I've really spent a lot of time C-Mac with the wide receivers. And I think, again, like last year, I think it's a pretty strong position. And I guess what the direction we're really moving with wide receivers is, for the most part, bigger athletic guys. I mean, the position is sort of changing just its body type.
So are you surprised, going back to last year, 2014, a lot of top flight receivers came out of that draft class. The Eagles got one of those players in Jordan Matthews, another guy who I think will be very good in 15 in Josh Huff. But are you surprised how quickly a lot of those receivers were able to acclimate and make instant impact for their teams?
You know, it's a fascinating question, because receivers seem to be acclimating more, yet what you keep hearing about quarterbacks, which I tend to agree with, is that many of these college offenses for quarterbacks do not help transitioning them to the NFL, yet wide receivers seem to be able to transition a lot quicker. So it's something I'm trying to think through and why that is, but there's no question that wide receivers seem to transition a little more quickly now to the NFL. And maybe it's something as simple, and I'm just thinking of this as we're speaking now, maybe it's something as simple as teams throw the ball a lot more, so therefore there's more receivers catch more balls.
And they get more reps.
Right, and they get more reps, exactly. So the numbers are better.
So where do you stand in terms of, I don't know if you've ranked, you know, which receivers?
I've looked at receivers.
You've looked at a bunch of them.
Are you Kevin White, West Virginia, Amari Cooper, Devontae Parker is another one who made people think.
I'll give you the guy who really jumped off the film to me, which a name that you're not hearing much about yet, and I really believe you'll start to hear a lot about him, is Breshad Perriman from Central Florida. And
father played in the NFL.
Yep.
Good bloodlines there.
And big, physical, can run, can snatch the ball. And again, I'm still a little early in the process, C-Mac, as you know, because it's just, you know, I had the NFL season, right? But I look at Kevin White, another 6'3", 210-pound kid, Breshad Perriman, 6'2", 260. That's what they're listed now. We'll get there, find out at the Combine this week where they stand. But I'm sure those are ballpark numbers.
Yeah.
Can an argument be made, and I'm going to make it, you can make the argument that those two guys are better prospects than Amari Cooper.
Where would you rank them going back to last year and seeing the guys like Odell Beckham, Mike Evans, Sammy Watkins,
right,
those guys?
Well, I really love Sammy Watkins.
Okay.
I would still probably at this point in the process say that I like Sammy Watkins more than those guys, but I don't know. I'm very anxious to look at Perriman more. He's a guy who really is fascinating me.
You mentioned the edge rushers and some good underclassmen in this group. Dante Fowler, one of them. Randy Gregory from Nebraska, another one. Who are some
Shane
of
Ray.
Shane Ray from Missouri. Who are some of the guys that you've liked? Who are some of the guys who stood on tape for you too?
Fowler really grew on me watching him. In fact, our esteemed producer, Fran Duffy, and I were having this conversation. I wouldn't be surprised, given his size and his movement, if some people look at Fowler down the road as a Clay Matthews type player. You know, it's, and people are going to fall off their chairs when I say that, but keep in mind, Clay Matthews was not a big time college player. You know, he wasn't one of those guys that had 15 or 20 sacks.
Part of a great linebacking group.
Correct. He was a mid-20s draft choice. You know, no one said, oh, he's a top five pick in a draft. Dante Fowler, the more I watched him, given his size, about 6'2", 260, he was really athletic. And another guy that really intrigues me as a guy that could end up being a big-time NFL pass rusher.
How much do you think it helped that he's played in multiple positions in that Florida defense?
Oh, I think that helps a lot. I think that helps a lot. He's moved around. He's been an edge rusher. He's been what we call a joker, where he lines up behind the defensive line and rushes from different spots. Yeah, so I find him really intriguing. And Randy Gregory, to me, the Nebraska kid, I loved him in my initial run through him. Really athletic. You could see he was a basketball player. I think he was a Division I recruit in basketball. Great flexibility, body flexibility, which is what you need to be a pass rusher.
Greg, I would not be able to let you leave here unless I ask you about the quarterbacks. Because a lot of people, especially in Philadelphia,
right,
are intrigued by the possible reunion of Chip Kelly and Marcus Mariota. You've watched some of the tape on the guys, and you're someone who does a lot of time on quarterback study. What have you seen from the guys who are coming out in this draft class?
Well, I think it's a tough draft class for quarterbacks. I think you've got Winston and Mariota. You know, there's pros and cons with all quarterbacks coming out. There's very few quarterbacks that come out. Maybe Andrew Luck is one where there's not really a lot of cons. So with Mariota and Winston, obviously there's an assumption that if Marcus Mariota were to be in Philadelphia, that there'd be a seamless transition.
It would be seamless.
No, obviously it would be a tremendous fit, C-Mac, because he knows the offense. This is the offense he's grown up in. It's my understanding he played it in high school too. So he's, you know, he went from high school to Oregon, and then if he was with Philadelphia, you get the same deal. But it's still different. The NFL game is different, but it would still probably be as good a transition as you could ask for.
Are there any players, you know the Eagles, you've been around the team, who you think could be a good fit? Looking at that number 20 draft slot, I know it's early because you're waiting to see how guys
that's
the combine, how guys are going to shake out in the draft. But are there any players who you say this guy could get in the system, whether maybe it's not just offense, whether if it's a defensive player?
And I haven't done corners yet. So, I mean, obviously we know that this is a team that needs to look at the corner position, and I haven't spent a lot of time on corners. So that's a tough question for me to answer. Okay. I haven't done safeties yet either. So, you know, I think those are two positions that somewhere will be addressed in the draft. If they can't pull off a deal for Mariota, if indeed that's what Chip wants to do, and they can't do it, and they're stuck at 20, I think that opens up any number of possibilities, and I haven't seen enough of the defensive backfield players to be able to answer that.
Greg Cosell, NFL Films senior producer, also hosts our Film Room segment along with Bo Wolf on Philadelphia.com. Thanks for joining us here on the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA.
Now it's time for Pick Six.
All right. While we were, you know, off the air there for a second, Fran, you did understand I was making a joke about.
Yes, the cream does often rise to the top. Okay. I was making a joke that I stumbled over crop.
Okay.
So we'll move on.
Well, we will just move on. Exactly. Now our Pick Six. So the theme for today, we decided to go with the six players who are going to generate such a buzz at the Combine this week by their performances that we'll be talking about them next week as players who have increased their draft stock, which is dangerous. Shouldn't be, you know, too much off of combine performances. But nonetheless, these are, I think, are going to be the guys that are going to be talked about as helping their stock the most. And I'll start things off here with a wide receiver, and you're going to talk about a lot of the Blazers. And it's not, I don't have Sammy Coates. It's going to be Philip Dorsett, who was phenomenal at the Senior Bowl. And on Twitter, Daniel Jeremiah at Move the Sticks said that he was in the 4.35 range in the 40 over the summer, and there's a pretty good chance that he'll run somewhere around there.
Yeah, I mean, week. You watch him. You saw him down in Mobile. You watch him on tape down in Miami. The guy's just he's a burner. And I know, actually, talking to Greg Cosell, he was very taken away by his speed in the open field and what he could present. I mean, he goes 0 to 60 flat. I mean, he's really impressive. Yeah, Dorsett will be fun to watch.
So next, quarterback from Baylor, Bryce Petty. You know, Greg was just talking about him during the interview that he has all the tools. You know, there's some questions about, you know, transferring from the spread offense to a pro-style offense in the NFL. But in terms of being a freaky athlete, he should run well in the 40. You know, he should test off the charts and some of the other drills. At least from the athletic standpoint, he can help separate himself and put himself in that conversation, for even more firmer in that conversation for that next tier of quarterbacks behind, as most people perceive, the top two being Winston and Mariota.
Yeah, I think so. And Petty's another one of those guys that Feldman had on the freak list a couple years, you know, last year. So, you know, it's just under 6'3". He's 230 pounds. Some people think he's going to run in the low 4.6s. His explosive numbers in terms of his lower body explosiveness, 38-inch on the vertical possibly, 125-inch on the broad, which last year, those were numbers that he put up as a junior last year. They would have put him in the top five in the combine for quarterbacks a year ago. So if he can improve on those numbers, you'll be able to see what kind of athleticism the kid has. Again, not one of these quick twitch athletes is going to, you know, shake anybody, but just the, you know, in terms of his lower body athleticism, you know, the explosiveness and things of that nature, I mean, he's got something to prove.
All right, next up, go on the defensive side of the football. Trey Waynes, the cornerback from Michigan State. Some argue that he is the top cornerback prospect in this year's draft. Some mock drafts link him to the Eagles at number 20. There's no question about his physical style of play, his length. It's just, can he run fast enough? Because if you talk to draft experts, they'll say that when it comes to the 40-yard dash, for cornerbacks, it's one of the most important drills, because you straight up have to be able to keep up with receivers at the next level. And if he can run a nice 40-yard time, that really should cement his status as the top corner, or if not the top corner, a first-round pick in this year's draft.
Yeah, I mean, it's so important for that position, because you already start at the snap, you start at a disadvantage. So the ability to be able to recover, turn around and face up to the receiver, and like I said, recover downfield is going to be really important. I personally think Waynes is going to test off the charts this week. So I think he'll be a guy, I agree, that will be one of the people that will be talked about most. But again, the teams know that these guys are going to test out really, really well. It's the people that, you know, in the media who may not know that some of these guys are going to test well, that will be taken away by some of these numbers, will be like, wow, you know, that's really, really impressive.
There'll be some performances.
There's always some surprises, but
that's when they have to go back to the film and see,
sure,
wait, he tested this in a 40, he tested this in the drills. Why is that not showing up on the game tape?
Well, and that's what's going to be, you know, interesting to see. And every year, I think Josh Norris actually talks about this often, is, you know, our good friend in Roto World, says don't count it twice with guys, where, you know, you look at a guy like Sammy Coates on the field, on the tape, you watch him, he's a burner, gets down the field with ease, can get over the top, take the top off of defense. But if he goes out and he runs a 4-3, everyone will be like, oh, man, he's so explosive. Well, if you watch him, you already know he's explosive, so he shouldn't get too much credit for that. That's why I said earlier that the big thing for him will be the gauntlet. So I think that'll be that goes without saying, with a tip of the cap to Josh Norris, don't count it twice.
I'll go defensive football again. Bernardrick McKinney, the linebacker of Mississippi State, was a high school quarterback, transitioned to the defensive side of the football. In college, another one of the Bruce Feldman freak guys. I think the big question with him is the athleticism. Is he going to be able to hold up in coverage at the next level? And if he can run a good time here, look good in the drills, that should once again cement him, put him in solid position to be a first-round pick.
Yeah, I mean, people question his athleticism, and at 6'5", 250 pounds, I mean, that's going to happen. But look, the guy was a high school quarterback, and you know, one of those athletic guys that, you know, he was the best player on the field in high school. You know, he was a basketball player, averaged a double-double as a senior in high school. So, you know, an impressive guy that can move pretty well. I'll be interested to see what how he times in, because I've heard that some of his explosive numbers will be impressive. So it'll be interesting to see.
We're going to go back to the offensive football. Miami tackle Eric Flowers, 6'5", 325 pounds. If he pretty much the big question with him is going to be the strength component. And if he can do, you know, 35, 40 reps of 225 pounds in the bench press between the size and movement skills, that should be a nice combination there for teams.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, he came when he arrived on campus at Miami, he was 300 pounds and he did 15 reps on the bench. 2 years later, he's 325 and doing 36 reps. So he more than doubled his bench press total. And that was a year ago that, you know, he did 36. So I would imagine that he'll eclipse 40 tomorrow when they do the bench press. I'll be interested to see how Flowers looks, because on tape he's very impressive athletically.
And last but not least, tight ends. Not talking a whole lot about the tight ends in this year's draft class. Max with the two X's is considered the consensus top tight end available, but someone who can help his stock, Jeff Huerman from Ohio State, 6'5", 255 pounds, was not able to participate in the Senior Bowl, but someone who, look, presents a little bit of strength, looks good in space. If he can look good in the movement drills and time well in the 40, you know, he can put himself in the conversation to possibly be maybe the number two tight end in this class.
Yeah, and people are going to be – I think that's a really good pick, because I think that going into this testing week, a lot of people don't really know about Jeff Huerman, and a guy that potentially could run in the low 4.6s, which is a very good time for a guy who's 255 pounds. And I think he's going to do really, really well in the bench press too. I mean, I've heard that he's eclipsed 30 reps. And again, for a tight end, that's very, very good. So, you know, people look at the power number, which the bench press isn't exactly the best indicator of power. But still, I mean, you're looking at that upper body strength there. And then his speed down the field, you'll be able to see that on display as well. So I think Huerman, I would agree, would be one of the guys that will be a standout this week.
All right, so I sprinkle a little bit of every position. Where do you go on your pick six?
All right, so real quick, I'll just go through these guys. I mean, the first guy is, I think, is starting to get a little bit of buzz. Daniel Jeremiah has been loving this guy up on Twitter. I've seen some other guys as well. The junior from Florida, tackle DJ Humphreys, 6'5". He came in at 300-plus today, which was going to be a big question, because when you watch him at Florida, a guy with a really skinny frame, you could tell he was sub-300. Some of these guys, you know, you look at a guy, oh, I'm kind of surprised that he's 298. But you could tell looking at him, he was listed 295, and I think that may have been generous. But he came in today over 300 pounds, but really just a big-time athlete, was a huge high school recruit. I think he was the number one tackle in the country by most recruiting services coming out of high school. Not a power guy by any means. He's going to have to get a little bit stronger. But when you talk about a guy who can get out in space, play in the second level, you know, can be successful on screen passes, Humphreys is a guy that fits the bill there.
Slowed down by injuries.
Slowed down by injuries, and that was a big thing with him in college. He started a total of 19 games over 3 years, so that's going to be the big question with him. Another one of these big dancing bear type guys, Eric Armstead from Oregon. We've talked about him in the past. But, I mean, 6'7", 296 pounds. I mean, he's gonna crack 5 flat in the 40. I mean, he could be what Greg Robinson was last year, where you see this guy and you can't believe how well he's running. Lane Johnson 2 years ago was same deal. Armstead could be a guy that does something like that. Played basketball for Oregon for a couple of years there as well for the Ducks. But a guy you watch him on tape has the ability to play in space, can one or two gaps, so shows the ability that first step quickness and makes plays in pursuit from the backside. So the athleticism is on display as well when you watch him during his days at Oregon. Going back to the offensive side of the ball, I went with Alabama running back T.J. Yeldon. I think a lot of people are going to be really interested to see Melvin Gordon run because obviously you see the explosiveness, you see that downhill speed. But I'm interested to see Yeldon at 220-plus pounds. I've heard that he'll run in the 4.4s. So while 40 speed isn't the most important trait for a running back, I think people will come away pretty impressed with Yeldon. I really like Yeldon. I'm a big fan of his. So
Why do you think he is not getting the top billing that maybe – you think he deserves?
It's interesting because typically, you know, and for whatever reason, typically Alabama prospects get a lot of love, and you know, sometimes more so than maybe they potentially deserve. But Yeldon, I think, is flying under the radar for whatever reason. I mean, look, he's been a big time player for them for the past 3 years, but he was never really there. Was always another back there that kind of took away the limelight. I think Derrick Henry kind of stole some of the spotlight for him this year, who went back to school as a junior. We'll be there in 2015. Yeldon has had, you know, some injuries, you know, injury issues. He's had ball security issues as well. So those are some big questions. But to me, Yeldon is one of the more complete backs in this draft.
Would you argue, before we move on, that Alabama running backs, maybe that's a stigma that he has to overcome?
Possibly. And that could – maybe he's feeling that a little bit. But look, I mean, Eddie Lacy has looked pretty good for the Green Bay Packers. I know the Trent Richardson label is stinging a little bit for those guys. But Yeldon is – he's a different back than those two guys for sure, just in terms of his style, just a smooth, elusive, patient guy that has three-down value. So I'll be really interested to see how Yeldon does this week in drills. Another guy on the defensive side of the ball – the next three guys are all defensive players. Ronald Darby, the corner from Florida State, 5'11", 195, so he's got good size. Athletically, I think he's got everything you want. I mean, he can play off, he can play press. He shows really, really good speed downfield. I think he shows quality instincts as well. I know there's some off-field concerns there that teams will have to work through, but athletically, I think he'll be a guy that after the combine, people will be talking about. So we'll see how Darby does on, I believe it's Monday. Monday the DBs work out, correct?
The final day, yes.
Yeah, the final day of drills. So we'll see how Darby does Monday. Bud Dupree, the defensive end linebacker for Kentucky, played a lot of linebacker, played off the ball a good amount. And people question, well, why is this guy not running, you know, moving forward? Why is he not attacking the passer more? They took advantage of his versatility, and he played a lot in space this year, 6'3", 268 pounds. One of the few pass rushers. We talked about it with Tony Pauline last week. You know, some of these guys are working with the defensive line. He's working solely with the linebackers this week. So at 268 pounds, how is he going to look moving in space? It'll be really interesting to see how he does in drills. Another linebacker who really, really stood out to me when I watched him for LSU this year, Quan Alexander out of LSU, 6'2", 227 pounds, really just flashed every single time you watched him. And then when I focused on him, very, very impressive guy. Just a relentless, tough, rangy player. Has the speed to play sideline to sideline. Looked really good in space. I think he's got a very versatile skill set. So I'm excited to see how he does in drills.
All right. So we're going to transition and stay in the state of Louisiana. And as we talked about at the beginning of the show, there's a quarterback who played for Chip Kelly, who's in this year's draft class. And everyone's thinking Marcus Mariota, and you'd be correct on that. But the one that we're going to interview here is Brian Bennett from Southeast Louisiana. Had two phenomenal seasons after transferring from Oregon. He's going to talk about why he transferred, who gave him advice to transfer, and how he's trying to transition from playing in the spread offense in Oregon and at Southeast Louisiana to getting ready for the pro game.
The unofficial visit.
Hello, everyone. We are Brian Bennett, quarterback from Southeast Louisiana and a former Chip Kelly pupil. During your time at Oregon before you transferred to Southeast Louisiana. Brian, tell the fans out there, what was it like to play for Chip Kelly there?
Yeah, it was a great experience. I think Coach Kelly did a lot of great things for our team. I learned so much from him, you know, things that I've continued to keep in my everyday life and, you know, also obviously in my football play. So it was a great experience there.
How tough was it to make the decision to transfer, though?
It was hard. You know, I had a lot of good things going at Oregon for me, just as far as the opportunity of being a part of that team and, you know, around some guys that I played high school ball with, and you know, being a leader on that team, being a team captain. You know, it's always hard when you kind of make a family to with the team to leave, but you know, all those guys understood, and you know, I knew I had to do you know, make a decision, the business decision at the time, to give myself an opportunity.
So why did you pick Southeast Louisiana?
For me, just throughout the whole process, you know, I started talking to different people and getting advice. You know, I had heard just from doing the Manning camp, I had, you know, been able to make a relationship with Archie Manning, and he had told me a good thing about the coaches there. So I was able to start conversations with those coaches. You know, I'd been to Louisiana before, so I was somewhat familiar. You know, I felt that it was going to be a good opportunity for me to succeed once I did go out there and visit and get the opportunity to meet with those coaches and some players.
Brian, what did you learn by thriving at two different places and being a leader at two different scenarios as you prepare for your NFL journey?
You know, I think perseverance is huge. You know, to continue to work for what you want. You know, I obviously, you know, was put in a situation where I had to go somewhere else to do that. But, you know, I never once began to doubt what I wanted to do, and that's to be sitting here right now.
You want to be on a team. You don't want to be here right now. You want to be drafted for a team, of course.
Absolutely. But, you know, as far as it's gone for now, yeah, now to move forward and, you know, get myself an opportunity to play at the next level.
Brian, what's it like competing once again? You went to the Senior Bowl. You had a great week there, boosted your stock. You're here at the Combine now. What's it been like being on this level with all these guys again?
It's great. You know, this is where I want to be, you know, competing with the best. So, you know, I'm happy to have this opportunity, and I'm ready to get after it.
Are you excited seeing how the spread offense is coming more and more prevalent in the NFL and how that will take advantage of the skill set that you bring?
Yeah, you know, I think that one thing I've been really trying to work on is being able to round myself completely. Although I've played in a spread offense, to be able to do everything that a pro-style offense, you know, may ask. You know, so I've been working on everything that comes along with that, and prepared to do whatever is asked of me.
What are some of the misconceptions of the spread quarterback, so to speak?
You know, I think you know, one concern is being able to come from under center, take snaps cleanly, being able to you know, get the footwork down and kind of make it, you know, a muscle memory thing. You know, I think that's just how much you want to work on, how much effort you're going to put into it. You know, also, I know play calls may get lengthy, but when you own your information, you know, it makes it easy. You know, maybe not easy, it's still a challenge, but when you own that information, it makes it easier on yourself to get that stuff down.
Brian, what would you think of a chance to reunite with Chip Kelly, but this time at the NFL level, potentially?
I think, you know, it would be a great opportunity. You know, I enjoyed playing for Coach Kelly in the past, and I would enjoy playing for him again. You know, I would enjoy to just get the opportunity, so we'll see what happens.
You do have the Oregon sneakers on. We should note, we're not going to put the camera on the table or anything like that, but Brian does have his Oregon sneakers. Brian Beck, quarterback from Southeast Louisiana here at the NFL Scouting Combine. Thank you very much, and best of luck down the road.
On the clock.
All right, special thanks to Brian for joining us here on the Journey to Draft podcast presented by AAA. Now we're going to go into On the Clock, where we're going to do a little over-under action.
Love the over-unders. Big fan. So play along at home.
So we're going to go through some of the combine drills and see what the best marks will be and set an over-under. And we'll start with talking about guys like Dorsett, like Sammy Coates, guys who can run these blazing 40 times. Over-under on the fastest 40-yard dash time, 4.28 seconds. The best is Chris Johnson's 4.24.
I'm going to take a guess, and I'm going to say that it's an under, meaning that that someone will run faster than 4.28. I think Dorsett is probably the guy at the top list. I think Devin Smith has a chance as well. You look at some of these other guys, I think that somebody will get into that number. And it could be Coates, who at 220 pounds would be absolutely impressive if he was able to pull that off.
I feel like we'll get under 4.3. I don't know if we're quite going to get to 4.28. So I will take the over on that.
It could be a push, too. We're not doing half points here, so it could be a push.
That's true.
In which case, I'll take the point for that.
I will give you if that. I will give you the point for that.
All right, good.
All right, so Stephen Paella, back in 2011, set the recent record with 49 reps of 225 pounds on the bench press.
Okay.
For this year, the most bench press reps, over under at 42.5.
I'm going to take that. I'm going to take 42.5. I'm going to take the over on that. I think a couple of these guys could get close to that number, whether it's a Danny Shelton, whether it's Eric Flowers. You look at some of these other guys along the offensive line. I think Lakin Tomlinson could get close to that number. A.J. Cann, I think, could get close to that number. Rob Havenstein from Wisconsin, I think, could get close to that number. I'm excited to see how these guys do. I'm going to take that action. Give
all
me
right.
that.
We're going to go for the highest vertical jump and the best recent one, according to NFL.com. Do you remember Donald Washington from back in 2009?
Donald Washington. No. Too many. You know how many names go through my head over the, each
I'm
year?
Sure.
I mean, like. I lose. By the time we get to 2016, I'll forget half of these guys in this draft. So
it's always funny when we do the game where we talk about like the rookie free agent class of 2012. My mind's spinning. I'm just trying to think of who I can't recall who's on the roster. Who's the practice squad like at the end of last season?
It's unbelievable.
You know, so Don Washington from Ohio State back in 2009 got 45 inches in the. In the vertical jump, the over-under here for highest, 42.5.
42.5.
42.5.
If you believe Bruce Feldman on that freak list, he had Sammy Coates at 44 a year ago. And I know that Sammy Coates is one of those guys that jumped out of the gym. So I'm going to take the over. And I'm really betting a lot on these guys. So hopefully they come through for me.
Okay. So we'll track those as the week goes on. What we're going to do is transition to someone who I don't think is going to put up that kind of numbers into the vert.
Not in the vert, but I've heard that he'll eclipse 40 on the bench.
Okay.
So we'll talk about this guy. But I think he could put up 40 on the bench. We'll find out tomorrow because they do go through bench press tomorrow.
Yes. Yeah. So the on-field stuff for the O-linemen and tight ends doesn't happen until Friday, but they do the bench press on Thursday. But our next unofficial visit is Syracuse tackle Sean Hickey. And again, the reason we wanted to talk to him was he had some great insight into playing the offensive tackle position. He's a Pennsylvania native, so we're going to get into his allegiance, whether it's Eagles and Steelers, but some great insight into what it's like to play and study the offensive tackle position. Here's Sean Hickey.
The unofficial visit.
We're pleased to be joined by former Syracuse Orange tackle Sean Hickey. And Sean, we'll forgive you for this, the fact that you grew up on the western part of the state. You did grow up a Steelers fan.
Yes.
Nonetheless, we'll get past that. You could have come out after your redshirt junior year. Talk about the decision in terms of why you decided to come back for your final season at Syracuse.
The main reason really was to keep developing my body. At the end of last year, I was like 293 pounds. Some people didn't think I was big enough to be able to move on. I had draftable like grades from when I got back from the advisory board, but at the same time, I felt that I would have been better suited going into a camp, like into your rookie camp's big. So I felt I would be better suited going into a camp if I would have waited another year to come out. So that was my main reason for staying.
So talk about your style of play and why you think it's going to transition well to the next level.
I feel I protect the quarterback at a very high level. In three seasons, I only gave up two sacks, a half a sack in 2012, one sack in 2013, and half a sack in 2014. And I feel I have a knack for what a pass rusher's move, for what they like to do, and be able to stay with them. A lot of it's just about your eyes, really. Like it doesn't sound too hard, but I mean, it is hard. But keeping your eyes in the right location to where they can't juke you out or do an inside move. Inside move on you and be able to protect the quarterback as well as in zone blocking schemes, know where the ball is going to hit and getting that defender move for the running back to cut in the lane and get some yards and plowing people out of the way. It's really a technician and good strength and some athletic ability.
How much do you enjoy studying the art of pass protection and run block?
It's fun because you could watch it on TV and say, oh wow, that guy had a great set. He blocked this superstar, but when you watch it, you're like, oh, he didn't really have a great set, but he still got the job done. Or like, it just seemed like you can see why people get beat, and like, your weight shifts on the outside foot too much, so then you get someone shoots inside, or your left hand was a little slow, it got knocked down, you put his hand on your chest and you got bull rushed. It's not because you're not strong, it's because your hand got knocked down, you lost leverage, and he was able to get power on you. It's really an art, pass protection. And to be able to study it, you can almost every single time figure out why an offensive lineman loses due to some technique malfunction. So it's fun watching, because while you watch your own mistakes and other people's mistakes, it also makes you a better player.
The vision part, I've never heard a tackle talk about the eyes.
Oh, it's huge.
Before.
If you look at Vaughn Miller's head, he's going to run right by you. You can't look at these superstars' head and let them juke you out. Or, like, they have so much elite speed, and they have so many moves that they can pull out on you. And if you're looking at their head, if you're just looking at their body, then, like, you're going to lose every time. You have to settle in on one specific location and follow that location wherever he goes, and that will take you to wherever you go. So that's a huge part of my game and most tackles.
Who would you say is the toughest player you face in a game situation in the last season?
Definitely Vic Beasley, in terms of talent, yes.
And so talk about how he sets up his moves, because he's, you know, Eagles run a 3-4 defense. He's probably on the lighter side for a 3-4 outside linebacker in the NFL. What are some of the things that he did that made him so difficult to defend?
I faced against him in 2013, and I knew everybody going into the game. You obviously knew he had speed rush. So, going to that 2013 matchup, I really was trying to defend the speed. But then I came to realize that he also had a bull rush as well, because I feel from his size he was pretty lengthy, and he had some good bull rush as well. So that adds a whole other dimension to a speed rusher if they have a bull rusher as well. So going into this game in 2014, I really studied extremely hard, try to figure out what his biggest strengths were, what he wanted to go to in certain situations. And he's really, really good at his get off is almost second to none, because the way I saw it, he would slow the film down in slow motion. It's like a way you watch film in slow motion. His legs are moving just as fast as normal people's legs are moving when you play the tape live. And he's on his third step when other people are on their first step. And his legs move like pistons. So whenever you have someone with that elite speed and that elite get off, you really, really, really have to have your own habit to get up. You have to get your hands up, and your eyes have to be right. That was the biggest. I didn't want to give him too much room to gain his momentum and let him come up with what he wants to do. I kind of want to attack and get on him right away. And that's really my plan going into that game, and it worked pretty well.
Sean, is there a certain type of scheme that you think you project best at the next level?
Well, at Syracuse, we were a zone blocking scheme 80% of my time there. Like, we always had some one, past 2 years, we had some one-back power. Under Coach Roman, we had some two-back power. But we were in a lot of zone blocking schemes, so I feel I'd be able to fit in that pretty well. I understand it. I know what the running back, where the ball wants to go on a certain type of play, split flow inside zone, full flow inside zone, depending on what you want to run. But at the same time, I do understand, and I feel I could also fit in a power scheme, but because we did run it, and I felt I was pretty effective at it, but at the same time, we ran a lot of zone, so probably most run for the
coach. Well, Sean Hickey, maybe we'll see you in Philadelphia on the other side of state, Pennsylvania.
That would be great. I have a friend, Joey Nassib, Ryan Nassib's cousin that lives out in Philly. He would be thrilled to have you there, so we'll see what happens.
Look at a little name drop there.
Hi, Joey.
So, thank you very much here for joining us here on PhiladelphiaEagles.com.
Now it's time to hear from you, the fans, in the draft mailbag.
All right, time for our final segment on the Journey to Draft podcast, presented by AAA. It is our draft mailbag. And so we went on Twitter to elicit your questions, and let's throw a couple out here. We'll start with at the one and only Thad wants to know if DGB, who we talked about earlier in the show,
okay,
Dorial Green Beckham, wide receiver from Oklahoma, slides into the second round, do the Eagles make a move?
Well, I mean, obviously the off-field issues are going to be the big question in terms of whether or not he slides and whether or not any team, not just the Eagles, but whether or not any team ends up drafting him. Obviously somebody's going to take a risk on him because of the or take a chance on him because of the on-field production, because of his abilities between the lines. But I think it's possible that he slides into round two. I think unless he goes to the, you know, comes to the combine and interviews really, really well and teams feel comfortable in the background check, I would be surprised in this day and age that he would go round one.
All right, next question comes from Soto the Spartan on Twitter. Wants to know, do you think Chip will relish or want Shaq Thompson for his versatility? There's some question about whether he'd be a linebacker or running back.
He's or gonna, safety. Mike Mayock had him at safety.
I was gonna say he originally said Shaq Thompson said he will not do running back drills, but Mayock, who has a very good eye for the safety position, having played that in the NFL, has him converting to safety, has him as his number two safety in this year's draft class. Do you think Chip will go for Shaq Thompson for versatility?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, it's very interesting because you look at a guy like Shaq Thompson, and to me, and I haven't done a ton of work on him. Him being an underclassman, and you know, there were lots of other guys I had to try and get to before we got here to Indy. But my first run through, he almost came off to me as a little bit more athlete than football player, regardless of position, what position you think he's best at, whether it's linebacker or safety. I think that he flashes really good instincts. At times, he'll show the ability to read run pass immediately, you know, get over the top of a perimeter run and fit the run really, really well. But there are times, too, where he falls steps and doesn't exactly process things as quickly. So I'm wondering, and again, this was on the minimal work I did, so I do want to do more. I'll be interested to see where he ultimately ends up, if it's as a first-round pick, what kind of scheme he goes to. I think ultimately he's a weak side linebacker, and you know whether or not you would want to pair him with Michael Kendricks and have two of those kind of body types, I think that's the big question.
All right, our last one comes from IMDSPN. Dwight Simmons is interested in edge rushers. Pretty much asking about the explosiveness. Who are some guys who might stand out to be 3-4 edge rushers for the Eagles? And really, this is going to come down to the testing. That's going to separate who's going to be, you know, and everyone keeps saying you go by the film. I think some of the numbers that the guys will post in some of the drills, not talking about the 4-yard dash, will help separate some of the players in this area. But it seems like the consensus would be Dante Fowler is the number one edge rusher coming into this. Randy Gregory is someone who has the potential to be the top edge rusher selected. So you figure those guys are going top 10. Who could be in that 20 range? I think one you mentioned, Bud Dupree. Would he fit into that category? He could be a possibility there.
Yeah, I think that's possible. I mean, look, he's a guy, 6'3½", 268 pounds. I don't know if he's going to have the longest arm. So teams that that value that length may get turned off a little bit by Dupree. Yeah, that's exactly right. But athletically, I mean, he's got what you want. I think he's going to test really well in the drills. So I'll be very interested to see ultimately what kind of scheme Dupree ends up in. Preston Smith is a guy that, you know, you look at if you want the wingspan and you want the measurables, Preston Smith has what you want. But the issues will be how athletic is he? You know, is he going to be able to play in space? And look, when you talk about outside linebackers, you know, in a scheme like the Eagles, number one is can you rush the passer? Number two is can you defend the run? And number three is can you drop into coverage? And that's not a really distant three, but it's a distant three. I mean, the first two traits are the most important. But
and it's funny because we usually talk about it the other way. We talk about who are the guys who have played in space, who are the guys who look the most comfortable.
Exactly. Well, yeah, I mean, because there are going to be times where those guys are going to play in space, and it's more prevalent, especially in a scheme like the Eagles, where you don't flip the linebackers. It's not like Dallas when it was under Wade Phillips, and you had DeMarcus Ware. 99% of the time, he was going to be the one rushing the passer because they moved him from left to right. With the Eagles, you know, you always have Trent Cole on the right side. You always had Connor Barwin on the left side. And they kind of flipped responsibilities at times depending on what was going on in that certain play. But another guy, Vic Beasley, I think, you know, may go off in that range. You know, very similar to what Anthony Barr last year. I don't think he's as good as Barr, but, you know, similar in a lot of different ways in terms of his explosive movement. We saw or we just listened to Sean Hickey talk about Beasley.
Sean Hickey talked all about him.
Exactly. So Beasley, I think, has some tools in terms of other guys that kind of fit that bill. Daniil Hunter from LSU with 6'6", 241 pounds. I think that's, you know, he's a guy that people will talk about. Very, very minimal production. Only had 5 sacks and 23 starts. So he's got tools, but why was the production not there? And that's going to be the big question I think that he'll have to answer for teams, honestly, when he meets them this week. A guy that we saw down at the Senior Bowl, Marcus Golden from Missouri, I think, will have some teams interested in that kind of a role. Tony Washington, we saw at the Shrine Game, was an Oregon guy, just under 6'4", 245 pounds. I think he's probably more of a strong side guy, so maybe more of the Connor Barwin type, but you know, a guy that I think could play standing up in space because he did it at the college level. And then lastly, Lyndon Trail, who we've talked about a lot. Small school guy out of Norfolk State, was a big-time recruit, was originally at Florida, left Florida to go to Norfolk State, 6'6", 262 pounds, great length, big hands, has great wingspan, athletic, you know, athleticism is off the charts. I'll be really interested to see how he tests this week in the athletic drills because he looks very impressive in space.
All right. So the one difference, I don't get to go to the Senior Bowl. I don't go to the Shrine Game. I don't get to see the guys in action.
Right.
We'll see the drills.
Sure.
And that, you know, whets your appetite. It gets you through the offseason, but it's not as good as seeing them with the pads popping. So that's going to do it for today's edition of Journey to the Draft presented by AAA. We're going to have another podcast tomorrow. Should hopefully have it up around the same time. We will have our preview of the offensive line and tight end drills.
Yep.
So hopefully we'll have someone to talk about that. We'll have Fran's top five.
Scary proposition again.
Man against machine, going against all the draft experts in terms of the top five at those couple positions. Media-wise, we are going to hear from, it's a big day, it's quarterbacks, wide receivers, and running backs. And there are a number of offensive linemen. There was some snafu going on with the weigh-in this morning, so they were a little bit delayed. So there might even be some more of the offensive linemen who didn't talk to the media on Wednesday coming through. So it's going to be stockpile full of interviews. You know, make sure to follow us on Twitter at Eagles Insider, at FDuffy3.
Don't forget that the kickers and punters work out tomorrow on the field.
That workout is tomorrow.
For those special team savants out there.
So, great story about Kyle Loomis.
It was a great story.
Phenomenal story. That's on our blog, the daily blog that we're going to be updating throughout the course of each day here as we're covering the NFL Scouting Combine. So for Fran Duffy, I'm Chris McPherson. Thanks for joining us again on the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA.